an Osho Talk. The Secret of Secrets. Talks on the Secret of the Golden Flower. Number 24.
The first question. What exactly is intelligence? And what is the relation of the intelligence of the heart to the intelligence of the mind? Intelligence is the inborn capacity to see, to perceive. Every child is born intelligent, then made stupid by the society. We educate him into stupidity. Sooner or later, he graduates in stupidity. Intelligence is a natural phenomenon, just as breathing is, just as seeing is. Intelligence is the inner seeing. It is intuitive. It has nothing to do with intellect, remember. Never misunderstand intellect with intelligence. They are polar opposites. Intellect is of the head. It is taught by others. It is imposed on you. You have to cultivate it. It is borrowed. It is something foreign. It is not inborn. But intelligence is inborn. It is your very being, your very nature. All animals are intelligent. They are not intellectuals, true, but they are all intelligent. Trees are intelligent. The whole existence is intelligent. And each child born is born intelligent. Have you ever come across a child who is stupid? It is impossible. But to come across a grown-up person who is intelligent is very rare. Something goes wrong in between. I would like you to listen to this beautiful story. It may help. The story is called The Animal School. The animals got together in the forest one day and decided to start a school. There was a rabbit, a bird, a squirrel, a fish, and an eel, and they formed a board of directors. The rabbit insisted that running be in the curriculum. The bird insisted that flying be in the curriculum. The fish insisted that swimming has to be in the curriculum. And the squirrel said that perpendicular tree climbing is absolutely necessary to be in the curriculum. They put all of these things together and wrote a curriculum guide. Then they insisted that all of the animals take all of the subjects. Although the rabbit was getting an A in running, perpendicular tree climbing was a real problem for him. He kept falling over backwards. Pretty soon he got to be sort of brain damaged, and he could not run anymore. He found that instead of making an A in running, he was making a C. And of course, he always made an F in perpendicular climbing. The bird was really beautiful at flying, but when it came to burrowing in the ground, he could not do so well. He kept breaking his beak and wings. Pretty soon, he was making a C in flying as well as an F in burrowing, and he had a hell of a time with perpendicular tree climbing. The moral of the story is that the person who was valedictorian of the class was a mentally retarded eel who did everything in a halfway fashion. But the educators were all happy because everybody was taking all of the subjects, and it was called a broad-based education. We laugh at this, but that's what it is. It is what you did. We really are trying to make everybody the same as everybody else, and hence destroying everybody's potential of being oneself. Intelligence dies in imitating others. If you want to remain intelligent, you will have to drop imitating. Intelligence commits suicide in copying, in becoming a carbon copy. The moment you start thinking how to be like that person, you are falling from your intelligence. You are becoming stupid. The moment you compare yourself with somebody else, you are losing your natural potential. Now you will never be happy, and you will never be clean, clear, transparent. You will lose your clarity. You will lose your vision. You will have borrowed eyes, but how can you see from somebody else's eyes? You need your own eyes. You need your own legs to walk, your own heart to beat. People are living a borrowed life, hence their life is paralyzed. This paralysis makes them look very stupid. A totally new kind of education is needed in the world. The person who is born to be a poet is proving himself stupid in mathematics. And the person who could have been a great mathematician is just cramming history and feeling lost. Everything is topsy-turvy because education is not according to your nature. It does not pay any respect to the individual. It forces everybody into a certain pattern. Maybe by accident the pattern fits few people, but the majority is lost. And the majority lives in misery. The greatest misery in life is to feel oneself stupid, unworthy, unintelligent. And nobody is born unintelligent. Nobody can be born unintelligent because we come from God. God is pure intelligence. We bring some flavor, some fragrance from God when we come into the world. But immediately the society jumps upon you. It starts manipulating, teaching, changing, cutting, adding, and soon you have lost all shape, all form. The society wants you to be obedient, conformist, orthodox. This is how your intelligence is destroyed. My whole approach is to take you out of this imposed pattern. This is a prison cell in which you are living. You can drop it. It will be difficult to drop because you have become so much accustomed of it. It will be difficult to drop because it is not just like clothing. It has become almost your skin. You have lived with it so long. It will be difficult to drop because this is your whole identity. But it has to be dropped if you really want to claim your real being. If you really want to be intelligent, you have to be a rebel. Only the rebellious person is intelligent. What do I mean by rebellion? I mean dropping all that has been enforced on you against your will. The morality, the religion, the politics, whatsoever it is. Drop all that has been forced on you against your will. Search again who you are. Start from ABC again. Think your time up to now has been a wastage. Because you have been following. No person is similar to anybody else. Each is unique. That is the nature of intelligence. And each is incomparable. Don't compare yourself with anybody. How can you compare? You are you and the other is other. You are not similar, so comparison is not possible. But we have been taught to compare, and we are continuously comparing. Directly, indirectly, consciously, unconsciously, we live in comparison. And if you compare, you will never respect yourself. Somebody is more beautiful than you. Somebody is taller than you, somebody is healthier than you, and somebody is something else, somebody has such a musical voice. And you will be burdened and burdened if you go on comparing. Millions of people are there. You will be crushed by your comparisons. And you had a beautiful soul, a beautiful being, which wanted to bloom, which wanted to become a golden flower, but you never allowed it. Be unburdened. Put all aside. Regain, reclaim your innocence, your childhood. Jesus is right when he says, unless you are born again, you shall not enter into my kingdom of God. I say to you the same, unless you are born again, let your sannyas be a new birth. Drop all the garbage that has been put on you. Be fresh and start from the very beginning. And you will be surprised how much intelligence is immediately released. You ask, what exactly is intelligence? It is capacity to see. capacity to understand, capacity to live your own life according to your own nature. That is what intelligence is. And what is stupidity? Following others, imitating others, obeying others, looking from their eyes. Trying to imbibe their knowledge as your knowledge. That is stupidity. That's why pandits are almost always stupid people. They are parrots. They repeat. They are gramophone records. They can repeat skillfully. But let a new situation arise, that which is not written in their books, and they are at a loss. They don't have any intelligence. Intelligence is the capacity to respond moment to moment to life as it happens, not according to a program. Only unintelligent people have a program. They are afraid. They know that they don't have intelligence enough to encounter life as it is. They have to be ready. They rehearsal. They prepare the answer before the question has been raised. And that's how they prove themselves stupid. Because the question is never the same. The question is always new. Each day brings its own problems, its own challenges, and each moment brings its own questions. And if you have ready-made answers in your head, you will not be able even to listen to the question. You will be so full of your answer, you will be incapable to listening. You will not be available. And whatsoever you will do according to your ready-made answer, which is irrelevant, which has no relationship with the reality as it is. Intelligence is to relate with reality. Unprepared. And the beauty of facing life unprepared is tremendous. The life has a newness, a youth. The life has a flow and freshness. The life has so many surprises. And when life has so many surprises, boredom never settles in you. The stupid person is always bored. He is bored because of his answers that he has gathered from others and goes on repeating them. He is bored because his eyes are so full of knowledge, he cannot see what is happening. He knows too much without knowing at all. He is not wise. He is only knowledgeable. When he looks at a rose flower, he does not look at this rose flower. All the rose flowers that he has read about, all the rose flowers that the poets have talked about, all the rose flowers that painters have painted and philosophers have discussed, and all the rose flowers that he had heard about, they are standing in his eyes, a great queue of memories, information. This rose flower that is there is lost in that queue, in that crowd. He cannot see it. He simply repeats. He says, this rose flower is beautiful. those words are also not his own, not authentic, not sincere, not true. Somebody else's voice. He is just playing a tape. Stupidity is repetition. Repeating others. It is cheap. Cheap because you need not learn. Learning is arduous. It needs guts to learn. Learning means one has to be humble. Learning means one has to be ready to drop the old. One has to be constantly ready to accept the new. Learning means a non-egoistic state. And one never knows where learning will lead you. One cannot be predictable about the learners. His life will remain unpredictable. He himself cannot predict what is going to happen tomorrow, where he will be tomorrow. He moves in a state of no knowledge. Only when you live in a state of no knowledge, constant state of no knowledge, you learn. That's why children learn beautifully. As they grow old, they stop learning. Because knowledge gathers and it is cheap to repeat it. Why bother? It is cheap, simple, to follow the pattern, to move in a circle. But then boredom settles. Stupidity and boredom go together. Intelligent person is as fresh as dew drops in the morning sun. As fresh as the stars in the night. You can feel his newness, so new like a breeze. Intelligence is the capacity to be reborn again and again. To die to the past is intelligence, and to live in the present is intelligence. And you also ask, what is the relationship of intelligence of the heart to the intelligence of the mind? They are diametrically opposite. Intelligence of the head is not intelligence at all. It is knowledgeability. Intelligence of the heart is the intelligence, the only intelligence there is. Head is simply an accumulator. It is always old. It is never new. It is never original. Good for certain purposes. For filing, it is perfectly good. And one needs in life, many things have to be remembered. Mind, head, is a biocomputer. You can go on accumulating knowledge in it, and whenever you need, you can take it out. Good for mathematics, good for calculation, good for the day-to-day life, the marketplace. But if you think this is your whole life, then you will remain stupid. You will never know the beauty of feeling. And you will never know the blessing of the heart. And you will never know the grace that descends only through the heart. God that enters only through the heart. You will never know prayer. You will never know poetry. You will never know love. The intelligence of the heart creates poetry in your life, gives dance to your steps, makes your life a joy, a celebration, a festivity, a laughter. It gives you a sense of humor. It makes you capable of love, of sharing. That is true life. The life that is lived from the head is a mechanical life. You become a robot. Maybe very efficient. Robots are very efficient. Machines are more efficient than men. You can earn much through the head, but you will not live much. You may have a better standard of living, but you won't have any life. Life is of the heart. Life can only grow through the heart. It is the soil of the heart. Where love grows, life grows, God grows. All that is beautiful, all that is really valuable, all that is meaningful, significant, comes through the heart. Heart is your very center. Head is just your periphery. To live in the head is to live on the circumference without ever becoming aware of the beauties and the treasures of the center. To live on the periphery is stupidity. You ask, what is stupidity? To live in the head is stupidity. To live in the heart and use the head whenever needed is intelligence. But the center, the master is at the very core of your being. The master is the heart and the head is just a servant. This is intelligence. When the head becomes the master and forgets all about the heart, that is stupidity. It is up to you to choose. Remember, the head as a slave is a beautiful slave of much utility, but as a master is a dangerous master and will destroy your whole life, will poison your whole life. Look around, people's life is absolutely poisoned by the head. They cannot feel. They are no more sensitive. Nothing thrills them. The sun rises, but nothing rises in them. They look at the sun, empty-eyed. The sky becomes full of the stars, the marvel, the mystery. But nothing stirs in their heart. No song arises. Birds sing. Man has forgotten to sing. Clouds come in the sky and the peacocks dance. And man does not know how to dance. He has become a cripple. Trees bloom. Man thinks, never feels, and without feeling there is no flowering possible. The golden flower that we have been talking this whole month is there in you, waiting for centuries, for lives, when you are going to give attention to it. So that it can bloom. And unless a man becomes a golden flower, what the yogis have called 1,000 petaled lotus, sahasrar, unless your life becomes an opening, 1,000 petals open, and the fragrance is released, you would have lived in vain. A tale told by an idiot, full of fury and noise, signifying nothing. Watch, scrutinize, observe. Have another look at your life. Nobody else is going to help you. You have depended on others so long. That's why you have become stupid. Now, take care. It is your own responsibility. You owe it to yourself to have a deep, penetrating look what you are doing with your life. Is there any poetry in your heart? If it is not there, then don't waste time. Help your heart to weave and spin poetry. Is there any romance in your life or not? If it is not, then you are dead. Then you are already in your grave. Come out of it. Let life have something of the romantic in it, something like adventure. Explore millions of beauties and splendors are waiting for you. You go on moving around and around, never entering into the temple of life. The door is the heart. So I say, the real intelligence is of the heart. It is not intellectual. It is emotional. It is not like thinking. It is like feeling. It is not logic. It is love. The second question. What is it in the makeup of someone like Eva Renzi that makes her tell such outrageous lies about a community like ours? I feel sorry for Eva Renzi. She was really in great need. She has missed an opportunity. She must be suffering from a split personality. She is not one, she is two. She is schizophrenic. And that's why she had come in search to find some clarity, some integration. She has been in psychotherapy. She has been psychoanalyzed. But the psychoanalysis has not been of much help. That's why her husband suggested her to come here. The husband also has not been able to live with her. They are separated. And just the other day, I was reading a statement by one of the directors. She is a film actress. And the director remembers that 10 or 12 years before, he was directing a film and she was the heroine in the film. They had booked a beautiful castle somewhere in Germany only for one day. And the whole crew waited and all the actors waited. And Eva Renzi never turned up. almost in tears. Everybody left. And in the evenings he turned up laughing, smiling. And the director says he became so crazy that he hit her with a chair. And then he felt bad too. He had a heart attack. For 3-4 months he had to rest. He says that anybody who can live for 1 hour with Eva Renzi will hit her. Now the poor woman must have been in deep suffering. She is crazy. She would have been immensely helped if she had been a little patient, if she had been a little longer here. But these patterns go very deep. These patterns go so deep that it is almost impossible to help such people. She was in one group centering, she created trouble there. And she was creating so much trouble that the whole group was disturbed. And you cannot allow 125 people to be disturbed for one person. So Prasad, group leader, has to tell her that if she is so much angry, in rage, so much in violence, it is better that she should participate in the encounter group where she can release her anger, her rage. Cathart. But the centering group is not for her. She immediately left and entered into the encounter group. And within hours she was gone. Because there also she created much trouble. Provoked everybody to fight. And the encounter group is meant to release. And when people started fighting with her, she left the group. Now the other personality must have taken possession of her. She did not report here in Pune to the police. If there had been something wrong with her, she should have gone to the police. She went to police in Bombay and reported that she has been beaten, so much so that the room was full of blood. Her clothes have been torn apart, and she had to go out of the ashram naked to the hotel. Now, do you think a beautiful woman like Eva Renzi walking naked on the Pune streets would have survived? And nobody remembers in the Blue Diamond a naked woman bleeding and coming there. Nobody has seen, and there are thousands of people the whole day here. Nobody has seen her going and leaving naked, bleeding, shouting, crying. Nobody has seen her. And she reported to the police in Bombay, not here. And the police came and searched for the thing and found the whole thing is a lie. But I don't think that she is lying. It is her other personality, her other self. the other person has taken possession of her, not that she is lying knowingly. When the other person takes possession, it becomes impossible. You don't know what you are saying, why you are saying. The people who are split function almost like two persons. When they are in one personality, they are a different person. When they are in another personality, they are a different person. And both the personalities never meet. Now she has created much fuss in Germany, newspapers. But I feel real compassion for her. I invite her again. I have not seen her. Just all this happened within a day. I have not seen her. I would like to see her and help her. She needs help. And she has gone so deep into this schizophrenia that I don't think she can be helped anywhere else. If she comes back, it will be good. Those two personalities can be welded again, but it will need patience. If she had come with her husband or some friends, it would have been better. They would have prevented her from escaping so soon. A little time will be needed. A lifelong pattern can't be changed in one day. And the schizophrenics have their own ideas about things. They are so full of their own madness that they think everybody else is mad. Their projections are such. They feel that they are being persecuted. Everybody is going to murder them or kill them. Once it happened, I had to live with a professor for a few months in the same room. He was a schizophrenic. When he was good, he was utterly good. A really nice fellow. But when he was bad, he was really bad. And it was very difficult to know when he is going to be good, when he is going to be bad. In the middle of the night, he will start shouting, or will start provoking me to fight with him. If you don't fight, you don't honor him. If you don't start fighting, then he is angry. If you fight him, you unnecessarily get into trouble with him. And then the neighbors will come, and he will shout, and he will make such fuss. And by the morning, he has forgotten everything. If you remind him, he will say, no, you must have dreamt. If you call the neighbors, he will say, they must have been dreaming, because I have slept so well the whole night. It was so difficult. I will go to the university to teach. When I will come home, all my things are gone. He had two personalities. The other personality was really something. He will store everything in his suitcases and lock them. When he will be good, he will be very generous. He will give his things to me. I enjoyed living with him for a few months. Because it was such a surprise, you never knew what is going to happen today. And when he was in his bad personality, in the neurotic, he was so much afraid that anything, and he will think the murderer is coming or the police is coming to catch hold of him, and he will imagine just a jeep passes by in the middle of the night, he will wake me up. He will say, look, the police is reaching, the jeep has come, now I will be caught, and I tell you that I am innocent and I have not done anything wrong. You are my witness. Just the whistle of the police in the night and he will be alerted. These people are in deep suffering. They have their own ideas, and they are so much clouded in their ideas that they don't see the reality. Now what she is saying, what she is reporting to the newspapers, I don't think she is aware at all. She says one man, old man, a Dutchman, he is nobody else than the famous author Amrito. He tried to rape her. Now he will be the last man to think of rape. She is just like a daughter to him. And such a nice, loving person. But somehow she has got the idea that there was an old Dutchman in the encounter group who wanted to rape her. Now she is going around telling people to the newspapers. But the idea has got in her, and newspapers are always ready to exploit anything. A man came home to find his wife having a nervous breakdown, screaming and banging her head on the wall. What is the matter, darling? Said the worried husband. I am homesick, sobbed the distraught woman. But you are at home, darling, said the husband. Exactly, said the wife. I am sick of home. When you have your ideas, your own interpretations, things start appearing like that. And you can always find explanations, excuses. You can always find arguments. And remember, neurotic people are very argumentative, because they are hung up in the head. So don't feel angry with Eva Renzi, not at all. And don't be worried about what in Germany is happening. It is going to help my work tremendously. I know my business and how to do it. You don't be worried about it. Now it is all over the Germany. Everybody knows my name. This is something great. And everybody is asking about me. Who is this man? Sannyasins who have come from Germany just few days before report that even taxi drivers ask, are you going to Pune? I am also thinking to come. What is happening there? Now many people will be coming because of Eva Renzi. And Remember, there is always a balance. Otherwise, life will collapse. Her negative statements started creating positive statements. That's how it always happens. That's what I mean when I say I know my business. Now, this director has come to defend me. He does not know me. But he says that if it has happened to Varanzi, it is perfectly good. She needed it. She deserved it. He says, all the people who knew her will be happy, particularly her husband. Now more and more positive statements will be coming. Just create the negative and the positive starts coming. Create the positive and the negative starts coming. They always balance. Otherwise, life will collapse. So never be worried about negative things. It is always like that. Do you know who created Christianity? Not Christ, but the people who crucified him. If they had not crucified him, there would have been no Christianity. You would not even ever heard of Jesus. It is the people who crucified him. Now crucifixion is such a negativity that the positive is bound to happen. Now somebody is bound to start worshipping. Then the balance. Life always balances. So the poor woman is in suffering, but it is good for my work. Nothing is wrong in it. Those lies that she is telling will be refuted from many unknown quarters. People will come up on their own. And many people will come just out of curiosity. Many more lies will follow. And many more truths to balance them. Now, because she started the thing, many newspapers have come to Pune since she started the ball rolling. Many newspapers, many journalists have come. Few have written against, few have written for. One journalist seems to be really very inventive. He writes, he reached at the ashram great door 5:30 early morning. He knocked on the door. A great beauty, Blanche, opened the door 5:30. Welcomed him with an apple. Or something like apple. He says, I don't know what fruit it was. She gave the fruit to me and she said, you are welcome in the garden of the master. Come in. And I asked, what is this apple? And she said, you eat it. It will give you sexual energy. Now the taxi drivers are asking, are there such type of fruits in the garden? We would like to come. Who will not like to come? Let these people work. They are helping my work. Nothing to be worried. I always rejoice. The third question. What is your message? I don't understand you. My message is that there is no message. I am not here to give you a message, because a message will become knowledge. I am here to impart something of my being. It is not a message. It is a gift. It is not a theory. It is not a philosophy. I want you to partake of my being. It cannot be reduced into a dogma. You cannot go back and tell to people what you have learned here. You will not be able. If you have learned anything, you will not be able to relate it to anybody. Although your whole being will sow it. You will not be able to say it, but only to sow it. Your eyes will sow. Your face will beam. Your whole energy will have a different vibe. I am not here functioning like a teacher. This is not a school. I don't teach you a thing. I simply want you to participate with me, with this mystery that has happened to me. Fall in tune with my energy, vibrate with me, pulsate with me, and you will know something which is beyond words, which no message can contain. Once the great master Josu was asked for his word. Josu said, there is not even half a word. When he was asked further, master, but are you not here? He said, I am not a word. He is right. A master is not a word. A master is a door. A master is not a message, but a medium. A master is a link, a bridge. Pass through the door, pass through the bridge, and you will come to know what exactly life is all about. If you can dive deep into the master, you will start feeling the presence of God. But it is not a message. And you say, you don't understand me. I know why you can't understand me. Because whatsoever I am saying is so simple, that's why. Had it been complex, you would have understood it. You are accustomed of complexity. The more complex a thing is, the more your intellect starts working on it. The challenge to the ego. My communion with you is so simple, so utterly simple, that there is no challenge for the ego. That is the reason why you can't understand me. What I say is simple and absolutely clear. I don't use any jargon. I am simply using the language that you use in your day-to-day work, in your day-to-day life. Maybe that is the reason of you not understanding me. The obvious is what I say and teach. Yes, the obvious. But the obvious sounds bizarre because you have become so much accustomed of the complexities that the mad mind goes on spinning and weaving around you. And moreover, always keep in mind that what I say is said for no particular reason. There is no motive behind it. Just as they say, art for art's sake. What I am saying to you has no particular reason behind it, no motive, but a sheer joy of being together with you. A sheer response to your questions. Not that my answers will solve your questions. No, not at all. If my answers can solve your questions, then it becomes a message. My answers will only help you to understand your questions. And when a question is understood, it dissolves. No question is ever solved. If you understand a question rightly, it dissolves. It is not solved. It becomes insignificant, trivial, and falls like a dry leaf from the tree. It loses all meaning. I am not going to give you answers. I am going to take away your questions. And when the mind has no questions to ask, in that utter silence where no question is present, you come to know that which is. Call it God, call it Tao, Truth, Nirvana, or what you will. That's why I say there is no particular reason in saying whatsoever I say to you. There is no particular motive behind it. It is a simple response to your being. I am only being a mirror. Hence, there is no particular need to understand me. Don't try to understand me. There is nothing to understand. Just be with me. And understanding will come on its own. And these are two different types of understandings. When you try to understand me, you will miss. Because while I am imparting something to you, you are engaged and occupied in understanding it. You will miss it. Don't try to understand it. Just listen. Just as I am talking to you without any motive, listen on your part without any motive, and the meeting is bound to happen. When I am without motive and you are without motive, what can hinder, what can obstruct the meeting? Then the meeting is going to happen. And in that communion is understanding. In that communion is light, clarity, transparency. So rather, trying to understand me, celebrate me, rejoice in me, and you will understand, and without any effort to understand. Nobody ever understands through effort. What effort do you make when you listen to music? Do you try to understand it? If you try to understand it, you will miss the whole joy of it. The music has to be rejoiced in. Do you try to understand a dance? Then you will miss it. The dance has to be celebrated. Do you try to understand the rose flowers and the songs of the birds in the morning? There is no need. Just be with the rose flower. Just see the bird on the wing. Don't let anything hinder. And suddenly, understanding arises. That understanding arises from the heart, from your intelligence. It is not of the head. And then the understanding has a totally different flavor, a totally different fragrance to it. Then it has beauty, because it comes out of effortlessness. It comes out of love. If you try to understand me, logic will be there. Mind will be there. If you don't try to understand me, if you just listen for the sake of listening, then slowly, slowly, something starts opening in you, arising in you, awakening in you. Let me be a provocation, not a message. Let me be an alarm to wake you up, not a message. If you think in terms of message, you will create a wall between me and you. Just be here. Just as I am with you, you be with me. For no particular reason. Just for the sheer joy of this silence, this presence that surrounds me and you, that joins me and you, this meditativeness, this grace, this moment of sheer beauty and benediction, and your heart will understand. Whether your mind understands or not is of no significance. The fifth question. Morarji Desai says that a student should not take part in politics. What do you say about it? Remember always, whatsoever the politicians say, it is always politics. Whenever a politician reaches into power, he always starts telling to the students not to participate in politics. But only when he is in power, he is in power. When he is not in power, he is all in favor. Students should participate in politics. How Morarji has reached into power? Basically, it was a students' movement in Gujarat and Bihar. On that tidal wave of the youth movement, he has reached into power. Now he must be afraid. Now if students continue to participate in politics, he can be toppled. This is something beautiful to be understood. Whenever politicians are out of power, they provoke the students, the same politicians. When they reach into power, they start telling the students, please, this is not your work. You should go to the colleges, to the universities. Politics has to be avoided. Don't be distracted by politics. Because that is the bridge. That bridge has to be broken, otherwise others will be coming. And students cannot be befooled so easily as others can be befooled. Youth cannot be befooled so easily as others can be befooled. Because the youth is still not involved into the wasted interests of the society. The older you grow, the more your investment is in the status quo. You cannot go against it. You are married, you have children, you have a job, you have to look after the family, and 1001 responsibilities on you. You would like everything to remain as it is. You will be afraid of any change. Who knows, your job is lost, and then what is going to happen to your children? Students prove to be the most revolutionary part of the society for the simple reason, because they have no investment. For the simple reason, they can ask, demand change. And of course they are young. Their eyes can still see a little bit. They can still feel. And of course they are going to live in the future. Past is not their world, but the future. The older you grow, the less future you have and more past. A man of 70 has very little future and very long past. And the man who is only 20 has a very little past and a long future. His orientation is future. And whenever future is orientation, there is rebellion, revolution. And the people who are in power are always afraid of any kind of rebellion, of any kind of revolution. So remember, when politicians say, participate in politics, then too it is politics. When they say, don't participate in politics, then too it is politics. They always speak politics, whatsoever they say, even in their sleep. If they start saying something, it is politics. Don't believe them. Even in their dreams, they remain politicians. But they are cunning people, shrewd people. Whenever there is a revolution, whenever there is some change, some movement, and the youth is stirred, the shrewd politicians simply ride on the wave. Now, this revolution that happened just 1.5 years before was created by the youth. And the power went into the hands of the very rotten old. This is strange, that the stir was of the youth, but the people who came in power are all above 70 and few even above 80. One sometimes wonders why dead people can't get out of their graves and become prime ministers and presidents. They will prove even better. I was reading a story. Three old friends met for lunch one day. Well advanced in years, they met periodically to keep up to date on each other. The youngest of the three told his news first. His wife had just given him a baby girl, and he was almost 79 years old. The second man spoke. He was 83 years of age, and his wife had just had a son. The two fathers were proud as peacocks. Then the third man offered some food for thought. My friends, he said, let me tell you a story. I am 88, used to hunt a lot, but I am too old for that nonsense now. But last week I was strolling in the park and a cottontail came bounding out of the bushes. True to an old instinct, I raised my walking cane to shooting position, cried, bang, bang, and the rabbit rolled over dead. A few minutes later, I spied another cottontail. Again, I simulated a rifle with my cane and cried, bang. Again, the rabbit dropped dead. What necromancy? What a strange spell is this? I wondered aloud. Then, gentlemen, I glanced behind. 10 paces to the rear was a young boy shooting with a real rifle. Morarji Desai should ponder over it. Your bang bang has not done anything. Just the youth of the country has been shooting behind you. But now, naturally, once you have reached to the power, you become afraid. But you ask me, what do you say about it? I also say to you that avoid politics. Don't take part in politics. Not for the same reason, of course. First, I am not a politician. Second, I am not in power. I have nothing to be afraid of you taking part in politics. So, the reason why Morarji Desai says don't participate in politics is something else. Why I say to you don't participate in politics, the reason is totally different. The reason is leave politics for the stupid people, the utterly stupid who cannot do anything else. First try to be a scientist, a poet, a painter, an architect, musician, a novelist, a potter, a weaver, a carpenter, something intelligent, something creative. If you find that you cannot create anything, when you have looked around and tried everywhere, and everywhere you get F, then go into politics. That is the last resort of the stupid and the scoundrels. Never before. First try. There are beautiful experiences in life. Politics is destructive. It is the most ugly phenomenon. Leave it to others who cannot do anything else. And remember, if you don't leave it to others who cannot do anything else, those others will become criminals. The criminal and the politician are the same type of people. If the criminal becomes politically successful, he is a great leader. If the politician cannot succeed in being in power, he becomes a criminal. They are destructive people. Their whole effort is to dominate others. The really creative person is not interested in dominating anybody. He is so utterly rejoiced with life. He wants to create. He wants to participate with God. Creativity is prayer. And whenever you create something, in those moments you are with God. You walk with God. You live in God. The more creative you are, the more divine you are. To me, creativity is religion. Art is just the entrance into the temple of religion. Create something. When you fail everywhere, then politics. It is not for the intelligent people. It is for the utterly unintelligent and stupid. And of course, they also need somewhere, some place to do some nonsense of their own. They need parliaments to quarrel and go mad. Leave it to them. I also say to students, don't participate in politics unless you have failed everywhere else. First try other dimensions of life, far richer. But my reason is totally different. And if you become interested in politics too early, you will remain retarded your whole life. When you are going to read Kalidas and Shakespeare and Milton and Tennyson and Eliot and Pound, when you are going to see the great painters, learn their art, when you are going to meditate in Khajuraho, Konark, when you are going to dream great dreams of creating a Taj Mahal, or a painting, or a poetry, when there is great literature, great painting, great poetry, watch your steps. Politics seems to be attractive only for one single reason, and that has to be understood. The English word self-consciousness has to be understood. That will help you. It has two meanings. One is the meaning which Buddha preaches and Gurdjieff preaches and I preach. That means become conscious of yourself. Become alert. Gurdjieff uses the word self-remembering. And Buddha uses the word sammai smriti. Mindfulness. Consciousness. Krishnamurti uses the word awareness. Become fully alert and aware. This is the one meaning of the word self-conscious. The word is very ambiguous. The other meaning is when you stand on a stage and you become self-conscious and you start trembling. The other meaning is pathological. First meaning means you are conscious of yourself. You are not a robot. You function out of awareness. The second means that you are aware that others are conscious of you, that others are watching you, that you are an object of others' consciousness, and you become afraid. So many people watching, if something goes wrong, and they will laugh, and they will think you a fool, are ridiculous, and you become afraid. Others are watching you, you are an object, you become conscious of this phenomenon. Conscious that others are conscious of you, then fear arises. But joy too arises. So many people watching me. So you repress your fear. You stand there on the stage without trembling. So many people watching me. The fear is if something goes wrong and they will think you are a fool. The joy is if nothing goes wrong and I can perform well, then so many people will think, look, what a great man, what a great artist, actor. speaker, orator. If I can succeed in performing something, so many people will look towards me, upwards me, and will enhance my ego. The politician lives in this. He wants many people to look up to him, so his ego is enhanced. He is afraid of going within because he knows there is nothing, emptiness. He does not know who he is. He collects his information about himself from others' eyes, what they say. If they say you are a great man, he believes he is a great man. He writes on the winds. If they say you are a Mahatma, he feels greatly happy. His ego is fulfilled. He is attaining a kind of identity. Now he knows who he is. He is. But this is not true self-knowledge. Others can take it away any moment, and they take always. Because sooner or later, they can see that you have not fulfilled your promises, that your performance has been bogus. You can see Morarji Desai's great ego by and by eroding. You can see the same with Jimmy Carter, the smile becoming smaller and smaller, disappearing. Because you cannot fulfill the promises that you have given to the people, and you always give big promises. Without giving big promises, you will not reach into the power. So you give fantastic promises that you know you cannot fulfill. But who cares? Once you are in power, then we will see. Then we will see how they can take you out of power. You will cling. And you will have all the powers to cling. And the whole bureaucracy and the whole government machinery with you. Once you are in the power, who cares about the promises? The leaders forget all about their promises and don't remind them. They feel very hurt and very annoyed. But people start seeing that the promises are not being fulfilled and these people have cheated us. The image starts falling. The person becomes smaller. That hurts. The politician is continuously in search of enhancing his ego. He needs others' attention. Millions of people have to feed his ego. The artist, the mystic, the musician, the dancer. If they are also asking for others' attention, then they are politicians. Then they are not real artists, not real mystics. The real mystic, the real artist is one who knows the other meaning of self-consciousness. He is simply conscious of himself. He does not need anybody else's attention. He is enough unto himself. He can be silently sitting and enjoying himself. He does not need anybody. His life is of awareness. He moves with awareness. His each step is full of light. Hence he never repents. He never feels guilty. Whatsoever he does with full awareness. All that he can do, he does. And whatsoever happens, he accepts, because that is the only thing that could have happened. He never looks back. He moves ahead and he lives in the present. But he lives in a very conscious way. Self-consciousness, in the meaning Buddha uses the word, makes you a creator. And self-consciousness, the way a politician needs it, makes you just an egoist. I say to you, don't participate in politics, because that is searching for the ego. And to search for the ego is to search for something poisonous that will destroy your whole life. The politician is the poorest man in the world, the most empty man, the most hollow, stuffed with straw and nothing else. The last question. When can a therapy be called finished? Therapy is the need of the divided person. Therapy is the need of the person who has fallen into fragments. Therapy is complete when you have become a whole, when you are one piece. But no therapy, as it is known in the modern world, brings you to wholeness. Therapy is at the most nothing but a rearrangement, maybe a little better than before, but you remain fragmentary. It is the same furniture rearranged in the same room, maybe a little bit more convenient, but it doesn't make you whole. Because when a person becomes whole, his life becomes prayers. Prayer is the byproduct of wholeness. Wholeness makes you holy. Unless your therapy brings prayer to your heart, it is not complete yet. The basic need is that of prayer. Jung is reported to have said, and his observation is absolutely right, that one half of his patients are in need not of therapy but of religion. Also he is reported to have said, and again he is right, that all the patients that come to him who are above 42 don't need therapy but need prayers. The real need is to have a context into this infinite existence. The ego makes you separate. Prayer dissolves the ego and you become one with existence again. To become one with existence is to attain to bliss. To remain separate, there is conflict. To remain separate means you are fighting with existence. You are not flowing with the river. You may be even trying to go upstream. And going upstream, you are going to be frustrated. You are going to fail. Flowing with the river, so much so that you become one with the river, just a part of the river. You don't have any will of your own. You are surrendered to the will of the total. This is prayer. And a therapy is complete, finished, when prayer is born in your heart. But the prayer has to be true. It should not be a formality. It should not be a repetition, parrot-like. It should arise. It should have roots in your being. Anutos has sent me a beautiful joke. Meditate over it. Every day for 6 months, the kneeling figure, hands clasped in prayer, had intoned the same pitiful story in the shadow of the back pews in his local Catholic church. "Ah, Lars, sure, I am only a poor, simple fellow. Not even the price of a glass of wine do I have for after Mass on Sunday. And I know I am a terribly wicked fellow. I give the missus a clout now and then, and when the kids get too much, I have to rebuke them with the back of my hand. But I am not asking for much, just a couple of quid in the old wage pockets, not for myself, mind, just for the housekeeping to keep the old lady off my back, and some sweets for the kids, maybe the old drink for me. I would not abuse it though. Lord, can you help me? It would make an awful lot of difference, and I will ask for nothing more to be sure. God bless. Hail Mary. Amen." Suddenly the door of the church burst open, and a smartly dressed West Indian swaggered down the aisle and took a defiant stance in front of the altar, and raising his fist shouted, "Hey there, Lars, now you listen here. I done just got to this country. I done got nothing, and they aren't about to give me no credit, so I done come to you. I needs a little sugar, mama first. I done need furs and jewels to dress her in. I needs a big car to drive her in, and I needs money to spend, so I want a big win on the horses, and then a good investment, and I needs it double quick. So quit messing around and just get at it. I know yous can do it, Lord. I just knows." Turning and striding out, he added, "I sure dig you, man. I sure dig you." Some weeks later, the kneeling Catholic is still there, mumbling into his hands, when suddenly the doors burst open, and the same West Indian, arms around a gorgeous girl, bobbed straight down to the altar, and grinning from ear to ear, laughed, "I knews you could do it, Lars. I done got a Rolls Royce. I owns the race course now. Talk about winning hard. I got my pants full of money here. Say, thank you to the Lord, honey." "Thank you, Lord," said the little honey. As they walked out, he said, "And Lord, any time you want a favor, you just come to me, 'cause I just dig you, man." Shocked and angry, the little Irishman watched them go, then rushed to the altar and prostrated himself, sobbing, "What have I done that you don't hear my suffering and anguish? How come you don't answer my prayers? I have been asking for months. I don't ask much. He is a foreigner too, and the color of the devil himself. How come you give to him and not so much as answer me? Ah, Holy Mary, have pity and tell me what I am doing so wrong." Suddenly the church went dark. A deathly rust descended all around. A stilly blue light appeared above the altar, and a voice boomed out, "I guess I just don't dig you, man. Prayer has to be of the heart. It has to arise from your total being. It has to be true. Only then, and only then, something has happened. God and you should not be on formal terms. You should dig him. Only then he digs you. Formality has killed all religion. Be informal. Be friendly. be relaxed with God. And the moment you are relaxed with God, therapy is finished. You have entered into the world of religion. Therapy is needed only because people have forgotten how to be religious. Therapy was not needed in the Buddha's time. People knew naturally how to be religious. Therapy is a modern need. People have completely forgotten the ways of being religious. They are Christians, they are Hindus, they are Mohammedans, but not religious. In my commune, I have made it a must that everybody should pass through therapies. Because unless you pass through therapies, you will not be able to connect yourself with prayer. Therapies will help you to unburden of the garbage that has been forced on you by the society. Therapies will help you to cathart all the rubbish that you have repressed within yourself. Therapies will clean you. And only in a clean, clear heart, prayer is possible. And when prayer arises, the miracle has happened. Prayer is the greatest miracle there is. Enough for today.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.